from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Well, I'm keeping a close eye on Washington. I actually slipped out this afternoon, and we're broadcasting live from First Baptist Church of Indian Trail, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. We've got a special event tonight that actually you can be a part of, no matter where you might be located. I'll talk about that more a little later in the show with the Sons of Thunder. David and Jason Benham join me. But first, this afternoon, President Trump signed an executive order to let immigrant families that are apprehended while they're illegally crossing the border stay together. Now, yesterday, as I talked about in the program, I took a group of evangelical pastors and leaders to meet with Attorney General Jeff Sessions to discuss ways to solve the crisis on the border. He joined us yesterday afternoon on radio as well. One of the solutions we discussed about eliminating the potential trafficking and exploitation of children by adults on the border was the use of DNA testing. Now, a leading expert in forensic anthropology at Baylor University has spent over a decade identifying forgotten remains of illegal immigrants. Now, can this technology be employed by border agents to verify families? Dr. Lori Baker will be here. She's a forensic science professor at Baylor University and also runs Reuniting Families. And also, the U.S. is pulling out of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, will weigh in on this important development a little later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. And let me remind you, we were talking about this yesterday, that we are coming up to the end of our fiscal year. And this is a time where, quite frankly, we need your support if we're going to continue Washington Watch. This program only comes to you because of folks like you who partner with us. If you'd like to partner with us, we have some generous donors that have put forth a matching challenge. So anything you give between now and June 30th will be matched. That's right. It'll be doubled. You can give us a call anytime during the program, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008, or you can make a contribution online at TonyPerkins.com. Become a partner with the Family Research Council and Washington Watch. All right, as we discussed yesterday, I was in a meeting with Attorney General Jeff Sessions discussing the immigration challenges facing the country and how the government can uphold the law while compassionately dealing with families that illegally cross the border. Well, earlier today, President Trump signed an executive order that will allow families who illegally cross the border and are apprehended to stay together. Now, this doesn't solve the underlying issue. This is a symptom. But the president acknowledged that. And he acknowledged that some are using children and endangering their lives. This is what he said earlier today.
In many ways, they're using the children. In all ways, Absolutely. They're using the children as a ticket Absolutely. To getting into the country. And we have to remember that. You know, there's a number of the 12,000 children, 2,000 are with the parents, and 10,000 came up with some really horrible people in some cases. You have the coyotes, you have the traffickers, the human traffickers, not only drug traffickers, but you have the human traffickers, and they use these children as passports to get into the country. So we have to work on that, too. It's a very complex issue. It has been going on. You shouldn't feel guilty because it's been going on for many, many years, many, many decades. But we're going to solve that along with a lot of other problems that we've already solved.
Now, one of the untold stories are the deaths that occur of those attempting to cross the dangerous terrain coming into the country. This is not a safe place for kids. It is very dangerous, and many people have lost their lives. With us now is Dr. Lori Baker, forensic science professor at Baylor University, and she also runs Reuniting Families, a group that identifies the remains of deceased illegal immigrants and returns them to their families. Dr. Baker, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for allowing me to talk with everyone today. This is something I feel very passionate about, and I'm so glad to have the opportunity to share it with others so that we can all act for the best and the good of these kids.
Before we get into the discussion of the application of the DNA testing, explain a little bit about what you have been doing on the border for the last 16 years.
Well, we've had a problem on our border for a long while, but in the 1990s, the U.S. instituted a new policy to try to prevent people from crossing, especially at the major urban areas where most of crossing took place. And these initiatives were to put resources and people along the border to make it so likely that you would be apprehended if you crossed without documentation, that you wouldn't cross, or you'd have to go into these really desolate areas. And what we found is that people are leaving not just for economic reasons, but now for safety reasons, especially from Central America, and they're willing to take the chances to go into these desolate areas. And it's very difficult for people to survive under those conditions. And my problem is that it's even harder for children. They can't regulate heat. They don't do well. We see hundreds of deaths each year, and even more that we can't even find the individuals that are missing. And when you put children under these circumstances, it's extremely arduous. And we've spent time, there have been instances where we're working on the border, recovering the remains of unidentified individuals who've died, and we've found children. And, you know, sometimes we're lucky and we find them alive wandering by themselves because these coyotes get upset because they're too slow. And they have to get their people where they're going, and they'll just leave these kids behind. I remember one day we found a 11-year-old and a 6-year-old that were all by themselves, and they were unaccompanied, leaving their homeland to come to the U.S. Luckily, these children were alive, but many that we find are just not. And I've spent quite a bit of time talking to families and trying to understand how you get to a circumstance where you'd let your 15-year-old child come by themselves from Guatemala all the way to the U.S. And so I talked to these moms and asked them how they made that choice, because I have three young kids, and I can't imagine being faced with having to make a choice like that. And these moms, every single one of them tells me he was told he had to join a gang. If he didn't join the gang, they would kill him and kill his family. He joins the gang. It's such a violent lifestyle, he won't live very long. His only hope is to come to the U.S. We know that there's a good chance that he would be hurt or brutalized or even murdered, but we had to take that chance because there's no hope here. So I appreciate that you said that we're talking about symptoms, because we are. The underlying problem is the instability in Latin America. People can't live in their homelands safely any longer because of the violence. We have some of the highest murder rates when you look at El Salvador and Honduras of nations that are not at war. I mean, the number of homicides happening there is so outrageously high, and there's no rule of law. People are going to keep coming until there can be some stability. And until we can help bring stability to these nations, we're going to continue to see people take their lives in their hands and come here. We're also going to see all of the other that comes along with it. Most of the people we're talking about coming to the U.S. are not violent criminals. They're good people trying to have a life, and especially all these children. We had over 40,000 children come last year that were unaccompanied to the U.S. Now, these children are not drug dealers. They're not in gangs. They're just kids wanting to live and have a life.
Yeah.
We need to do something about the underlying problems.
Right. And it's a very complex problem. And we're focusing on one aspect, and that is the children with families at the borders. But there's a foreign policy component of bringing stability south of our border. There's our own enforcement of our immigration policy. When it's lax, it's an invitation for people to come. But you have been spending the last 16 years identifying the remains of those that did not make it across the border using DNA. How frequent does that happen on our border?
How frequent are there deaths, or how frequent are we using DNA?
How frequent are there deaths on the border? I mean, is this a big problem? Are we seeing a lot of people losing their lives crossing the border?
Absolutely. In the summertime, in some of the areas where I've worked, we have two or three cases a day where we're going out and recovering individuals. So they're constant, especially in times when it's very hot outside. We see a lot of people crossing in the summer, and it's just very dangerous. The temperatures get very high, and then they get very low. We have traffickers that aren't honest with people about what they're going to face, and people aren't prepared. They get left behind. We see deaths constantly, and many of these deaths are happening in rural areas, especially in Texas, where we don't have medical examiner's offices. So there's no investigation, and there's no way for families to find out what happened to their loved ones. And what really disturbs me is that some of these cases are homicides, and they're not investigated, which means we don't have the rule of law on our side of the border. It is a very complicated issue.
Right.
Luckily, we've had some really great advances with the National DNA Database and the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, and trying to get a system that works for these international migrants for their identifications. So we've made a lot of progress, and we have a lot more that we need to make.
So, Dr. Baker, this technology of using DNA to identify the remains, there is the possibility of using DNA testing to verify the connection or the relationship between parent and child when they're apprehended at our border, correct?
Yes, and I think this is really important. What we've seen are these tens of thousands of kids crossing unaccompanied, and we've seen a rise in the number of... It's very difficult to seek asylum if you're an adult man. But if you're an adult man traveling with a child, you have a better chance of being granted asylum. And so what we've seen are these men traveling alone coercing these children to saying that that's their father. And, there's a lot of different ways in which this happens. And we need to verify what's going on. We're seeing a huge rise in human trafficking all along this area because you have all these vulnerable children. And if we allow people in the U.S. to claim these children, we need to prove that they really do belong to them. This is something that's done fairly standardly for people in immigration, like in the U.K. This happens all the time. In fact, they have many online services where you can go and make these verifications of your identity for immigration purposes. So it's not really outlandish, and it's not that it would be the first time it's been instituted. It just would be in the U.S. in these cases.
And what would be the time period in which this could be verified, the relationship could be verified?
Most of the labs can turn it around in about 24 hours once they get the sample. So the biggest issue would be making sure that there are labs with capacity to do the work and getting the samples to the labs as quickly as possible. So certainly it's very feasible within a couple of days. And if we were able to increase the capacity of laboratories that already exist, it could cut that substantially.
And we're out of time, Dr. Baker, but one final question. How conclusive would the test be?
Oh, 100%. I mean, these tests are very accurate.
All right.
Now, there are issues if the father doesn't know that he's not really the biological father, but there are lots of other ethical questions we'd have to ask along the way as well.
But it does get to the verification to try and prevent children from being exploited, without question. Dr. Lori Baker, thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
It's Dr. Lori Baker, forensic anthropologist at Baylor University. All right. The United States pulling out of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. We'll weigh on that next. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with Washington Watch. We have our greatest opportunity to advance biblical values in our nation's capital and across America than ever before. But we urgently need your help to seize this moment. For 35 years, Family Research Council has stood for human dignity. We're standing up to the cultural bullies like Planned Parenthood and the SPLC that are pushing shocking sex ed programs into our schools that is nothing short of pornographic. And we know the harms that creates. Religious freedom is being restored, but much work remains. As our fiscal year is quickly coming to an end on June 30th, Friends of FRC have offered an amazing $800,000 matching challenge that will double the impact of your gift today. Help us complete our mission as we pursue a culture in which all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Visit TonyPerkins.com to donate today or call 800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008. May God bless you in your faithfulness.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. As I mentioned, I slipped out of Washington, D.C. today. I'm actually outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, First Baptist Church, Indian Trail. We've got a special event coming up tonight that you can be a part of. Got to hold on. The Benham brothers join me later to talk about that. And also, it's that time of year as we're coming up to the end of the fiscal year. We need your support to continue Washington Watch. And if you'd like to partner with us, we've got some generous donors that have put up a match that anything you give between now and the end of the year, fiscal year, June 30th, will be doubled. All right? You can make your contribution. You can partner with us by going to TonyPerkins.com, or you can call 800-225-4008. Folks standing by to take your call. All right, Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, announced yesterday that the United States would be officially withdrawing from the U.N. Human Rights Council.
As we said we would do a year ago, if we did not see any progress, the United States is officially withdrawing from the U.N. Human Rights Council. In doing so, I want to make it crystal clear that this step is not a retreat from human rights commitments. On the contrary, we take this step because our commitment does not allow us to remain a part of a hypocritical and self-serving organization that makes a mockery of human rights.
With us now is Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. In 1987, Frank was nominated by President Reagan to become the Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy, senior position in the Defense Department. Frank, many believe that this decision is long overdue.
I'm among them, Tony. I think this was a mistake by Barack Obama that was made in the aftermath of President George W. Bush deciding we weren't going to be involved with the predecessor to this particular agency of the United Nations, for all the same reasons as Nikki Haley has just laid out, and Mike Pompeo as well yesterday. It is an organization that is comprised in part of organizations or states, member states, I should say, that are among the worst of the violators of human rights on the planet. Nations like Saudi Arabia and China and Cuba and Venezuela. It has diverted its gaze from those kinds of states and the problems that they constitute and focused, as you know, Tony, almost, if not entirely, substantially on one country right. whose human rights record is actually not all that bad, certainly under the circumstances, namely Israel. And then on top of all of it, we in the United States, we the taxpayers of the United States, wind up carrying, I think it's a quarter of the cost of this operation. So for all these reasons, it was a bad idea to get back into this rat's nest. It is a very good and overdue decision by President Trump to withdraw us from it, and I commend him for doing so.
Yeah, when you look at this and you look at the cast of characters, I mean, it really is the fox guarding the hen house.
Well, actually, it's the fox inside the hen house eating the chickens. I think it's more like it. But yeah, the basic idea is right. We've got people who have no interest in human rights, who, to the contrary, are, as I've indicated, relentlessly abusing their own people and others if they can get their hands on them. And we are legitimating them by treating them as members in good standing on this commission, or council now, they call it, as long as we're party to it. So I think we need to be sending a clear signal that human rights matter to us, and participating in this particular UN fraud doesn't do that. So it's, as I say, overdue to disengage from it.
So what happens now with the U.S. pulling off of this council? What happens now?
Well, if the previous exercise is any guide, it's conceivable that the U.N. will say, oh, no, wait a minute. We'll reform this thing. In the last instance, they changed it, for example, from calling it the Human Rights Commission to calling it the Human Rights Council. But literally, the same bad actors were on both. The same agenda dominated both. The same taxpayer burden applied to both. So I don't think you're going to see much in the way of change, Tony. But there may be an effort on their part at last to reform it. And if so, then, you know, we can revisit the question, I guess. But this is a UN agency, after all, and you know very well. Very little good comes out of the UN, unfortunately.
So you mentioned the name change when they went from a commission to a council. What was significant about the name change?
Oh, I think it just confused the innocent, you know, quite frankly. As I say, the point of the exercise as far as the UN was concerned was to maintain more or less the status quo. They were hoping, I think, that they'd appease the United States, but under then Ambassador John Bolton and George W. Bush, that didn't work. Then along came Barack Obama a couple of years later, and it did. You know, Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador at the time, said, we want to get back in. Barack Obama was fine with having, again, this fraudulent idea that by virtue of us being party to it, we were somehow going to make people behave better and be more responsible and actually live up to their commitments to protect human rights. Didn't happen, won't happen, I suspect, in the future. And I think that hopefully this is the last of these goat ropes that we'll go through.
So, Frank Gaffney, you give the administration two thumbs up or one thumb up?
No, I'd say two. The only complaint would be that they gave them 17 months or so to go through this reform dance. But besides that, I think it's a very commendable thing that they finally did pull the plug.
All right. Frank Gaffney, founder and president of Center for Security Policy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure as always, Tony. Thank you.
All right, folks. Check out Frank's work. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, I'm going to tell you why We are outside of Charlotte, North Carolina at Indian Trail Baptist Church, or First Baptist Indian Trail, with the Sons of Thunder, David and Jason Benham. Join me next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with Washington Watch. We have our greatest opportunity to advance biblical values in our nation's capital and across America than ever before. But we urgently need your help to seize this moment. For 35 years, Family Research Council has stood for human dignity. We're standing up to the cultural bullies like Planned Parenthood and the SPLC that are pushing shocking sex ed programs into our schools that is nothing short of pornographic, and we know the harms that creates. Religious freedom is being restored, but much work remains. As our fiscal year is quickly coming to an end on June 30th, Friends of FRC have offered an amazing $800,000 matching challenge that will double the impact of your gift today. Help us complete our mission as we pursue a culture in which all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Visit TonyPerkins.com to donate today or call 800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008. May God bless you in your faithfulness.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. This new anti-Semitism is disguised simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at these incidents reveal how Jewish college students are being attacked merely for believing that Israel should exist. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
This is Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. As I mentioned, we're broadcasting live from the First Baptist Church of Indian Trail, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, where Dr. Mike Whitson is the pastor. And we're here for a special reason. We're here for the Standing Firm, a Culture Impact Team training webcast event that is taking place tonight. We have folks from about 40 different states will be tuned in, and about a half dozen other countries, learning how their church can be a part of impacting the culture. And guess what? You can be a part of it. You can tune in tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Go to TonyPerkins.com and find out more about it. Now, joining us live in studio are a couple of our featured presenters, the Sons of Thunder, David and Jason Benham. Guys, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, man. Love being here with you, man.
I'm kind of like in your neck of the woods, right?
Yeah, it is. We got to get you some good barbecue in North Carolina. That's right.
All right, where is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. You showed up empty-handed.
All right. Okay, guys, you for the last few years have been stirring it up all across the country. What role does the church have to play in that?
Well, first of all, you know, we actually aren't stirring it up. It's the enemy that robs to kill and to destroy. He's stirring things up. Jason and I are then, you know, it's our role as believers, as salt and light, to step in. And when we begin to see truth redefined before our very eyes, it's the knowledge of the truth that sets people free, right, TP? I mean, if we don't speak the truth and speak it in love, how can the captive be set free? And so we're watching a redefinition of truth, even what it means to be human on many levels, whether it's even just not just policy, but culturally speaking, we're seeing these things. And so here in our own hometown, we know we have to mobilize. We have to stand firm.
So, Jason, that's happening. What role does the church have in that?
Well, the beauty is that as the culture seems to be getting darker, the church is realizing who she really is. Church isn't a place that you go. It's something that we are. You know, we are the body of believers, and we have to be active and activate. out into culture. And there's many different spheres of that culture. Specifically in the political realm, you know, we know that government is a minister of God. So the church needs to actively be involved in government and be involved in electing people to run the government, which is a very important thing. So David and I are really trying to help educate. You know what? Church isn't just that building that you go to on a Sunday.
Right.
It's who we are as a body, and we've got to get out and do something.
It's a part of, you know, as the scripture instructs pastors to equip the saints for the work of the ministry.
For the building up of the body of Christ.
Right. And it's not inside the church.
Uh-uh.
That's right. That's the world around.
No.
That's where we go.
You know, we say some things when we travel the country and speak, and one of the things we say is so often we've taken the whole boot camp mentality, because we truly are in a spiritual battle. I mean, oftentimes people think, so it's a battle between Republicans and Democrats or whatever, and it's not. It's a battle over truth and lies, light and darkness, good and evil. Because we are in this battle, we as Christians on Sunday mornings are to be going to a boot camp, not a bounce house. We've effectively removed the warning label off of the Bible.
You worked on that one.
We did.
You did.
We worked on that.
I could tell because you were smiling.
Oh, it felt so good.
Yeah,
but
I know. I could
tell. You smiled too. I saw it on your
listen.
Handsome.
That was David that said it, but it was Jason that came up with it.
I believe it. I believe it. All right, guys. What are you going to talk about tonight?
Well, you're hosting the panel with us, so whatever you lob our direction, we'll try our best to hit it. Just don't throw any curveballs at us. But we're going to talk about what it means to understand the times. That's one of the things that right out of the gate, we as believers are supposed to be like the men of Issachar who understood the times and knew what they should do. We can't just turn a blind eye to what's happening in culture today and just pretend that this stuff doesn't exist. These things that we're watching, these redefinitions of truth across various spheres of culture. So we have to understand the times, and we're also going to talk about what we can do about it, too.
The Culture Impact Team, what role does that play?
Oh, my goodness. It basically makes it so easy for pastors to be able to get engaged civically. Because, you know, you've got your missions little group, you've got your committees, you've got all sorts of different, your worship team, and you've got, you know, your pastoral team.
Nursery team.
Yeah.
You guys are on the nursery team, right?
Maybe we should be. At home
maybe,
we are.
Maybe not.
But there's got to be a team for cultural engagement. And so what FRC has done under your direction, I might add, has basically put cultural engagement in a box in terms of how can a pastor then basically hand it over to a leader in his church to get out there and run this program. It's phenomenal.
It's really helped us here even in Charlotte. I mean, when we see some of the things that were coming down the pike through the Mecklenburg School Board and these things with the redefinition of diversity and all these things, boom, cultural impact teams mobilized. We began to get information. We began to find out how we can mobilize as well. We were educated. So, I mean, it's very important that these cultural impact teams not only continue but grow rapidly across the country.
And as you say, it's Culture Impact Team in a box. Yep. It's they get the manual. It's easy to do. This is not it's not rocket science.
You know, just have to have a leader at your church that will actually take the bull by the horns and actually run the folks through the program. And it's phenomenal if they're willing to do it.
And it's a great opportunity for a pastor to call out, hey, who is going to be a missionary to this culture out of our congregation that we can get behind? And when a man or a woman or a couple or a family rises up, boom, now you've got a platform that they can use that's effective, that mobilizes, that educates, that's biblically based, that's rooted in love and compassion, that desperately seeks to see the best, God's best for people, and not just fighting an issue, because that's not what we're called to do. And so it's a great opportunity to do these things. That's why Jason and I are so happy to be a part of this.
We're up against a break. Jason, I'm sorry. He took all your time. I'm going to give you a little extra time tonight.
Oh, come on.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right, guys, I know you got to go meet our guest. You're hosting a reception here this evening. Folks, 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can be a part of this special event here at First Baptist Church Indian Trail on how to set up and run a culture impact team. And you'll hear more from David and Jason. Guys, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, man.
Thank you,
bud.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with Washington Watch. We have our greatest opportunity to advance biblical values in our nation's capital and across America than ever before. But we urgently need your help to seize this moment.
For 35 years, Family Research Council has stood for human dignity. We're standing up to the cultural bullies like Planned Parenthood and the SPLC that are pushing shocking sex ed programs into our schools that is nothing short of pornographic. And we know the harms that creates. Religious freedom is being restored, but much work remains. As our fiscal year is quickly coming to an end on June 30th, Friends of FRC have offered an amazing $800,000 matching challenge that will double the impact of your gift today. Help us complete our mission as we pursue a culture in which all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Visit TonyPerkins.com to donate today or call 800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008. May God bless you in your faithfulness.
If you think anti-Semitism is a thing of the past, think again. In the last 3 years, over 1,700 anti-Semitic incidents have occurred on college campuses across the country. Supposed anti-hate watchdog groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center have curiously turned a blind eye to this emerging campus threat, and this new anti-Semitism has flown under the radar. The perpetrators of the new anti-Semitism are primarily the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement and the Students for Justice in Palestine. These two groups disguise their bigotry simply as opposition to the State of Israel's policies toward Palestinians. But a closer look at the language and tactics used by these groups reveals how Jewish college students are being attacked for believing that Israel should exist, or merely because they are Jews. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/antisemitism.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? We want to hear from you. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line for a chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And as we were just discussing, we're broadcasting live from First Baptist Church of Indian Trail, right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, where we're having a special event tonight that you can participate in. Standing Firm, a Culture Impact Team training webcast event, 7 p.m. Eastern. To find out more how you can participate with folks all across this country. But a Culture Impact Team is essentially a team, as David and Jason were describing earlier. You got a missions team, you have a nursery team, you got a parking team, you might have a security team. Well, you've got a Culture Impact Team, and it just leads the congregation in areas of interest and engagement. Part of it is voter registration, it's voter education, voter mobilization, but it's also more than that. It is being engaged in the community. Some of it's working with Meals on Wheels, doing disaster relief. Whatever it is impacting your culture, of course, there is that component of engaging from a civic standpoint. But we've got Culture Impact Teams that working with Dr. Tony Evans, adopting a school using their program. There's like about 100 different types of projects you can take on that we list in the Culture Impact Teams that you can be a part of being engaged in your community. We've got some Culture Impact Teams that, for instance, bake pies and take them down to their state legislature and just minister to that way, or give out Bibles to elected officials, pray for them. There's so many different things you can do. So it's not all the political things that people would want to focus upon that is on the left. Those are important things about Christian citizenship that we need to be engaged in, but it's so much more.
And if you'd like to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, we're going to take your phone calls. And it's been a busy week. I was just commenting to somebody earlier. I mean, it's almost like every other hour there's some breaking news story. There's so much to talk about. I want to bring you the newsmakers and inform you and give you a front row seat to what's happening. So the program all week has been full. But here's the phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Today talking about the president's announcement on keeping families together at the border. We were talking with Dr. Lori Baker about how DNA testing could be used to identify those that would seek to exploit or traffic children at the border, a huge problem, as Dr. Baker made reference to. She's in Waco and has been called upon many, many times to identify the remains of those individuals that have been left behind or died trying to cross the border. Also talking about the United States pulling out of the United Nations Human Rights Council. Significant development. And then, of course, talking about tonight's Culture Impact Team event. So give me a call if you want to talk about any of that. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I think my concern, and I want to make sure, and the vice president made this comment very clear today in the press conference when the president said he was going to sign an executive order. And part of this is having the facilities, spending additional money to keep these families together. And that still there could be some hurdles because some courts ruled that you cannot detain these children for over 20 days. That's even if they're with their families. And so there's still some hurdles to overcome here. But this addresses this one symptom. But as we were talking about earlier with Dr. Baker, this is a symptom of a much bigger problem. The fact that we have a immigration system that's broken, and when I say that it's broken, part of that is there are some challenges for people to come here legally. Small things, but collectively it becomes a big deal. For instance, someone comes over legally. They have to be here for a certain period of time. They can't leave. Well, what if they have a death in the family? They want to go home. They can't. Some find it easier to, believe it or not, to illegally go back and forth across the border. That's just one minor example. What I hope does not happen is that with all of this national focus and attention that was generated by the heartbreaking pictures of children being separated from their parents, which, by the way, was happening under the previous administration as well. The media just didn't focus on it. But with that attention, there is momentum to actually address the problem of immigration. I'm hoping they don't just cherry pick and take care of this one issue and fail to reform the system. And we've got two immigration bills that are in the House that will be voted on probably this week, probably tomorrow. So they step over that just to deal with this one issue. That would be tragic because it's just a matter of time before we get another crisis. It's going to happen until we fix the underlying system. And so the president's executive order today does not resolve our illegal immigration problem. It simply addresses this one symptom that I think most people don't want to see. I mean, I think most Americans are compassionate. And even though, as I've described earlier in the week, it happens domestically, we still don't want it to happen if we can avoid it. Now, we have to understand that these parents have a responsibility in making this decision to bring their children. But as Dr. Baker was talking about, you look at the instability and the problems that we see in Central America, and people are desperate to escape it. So there's a foreign policy component here. So it's, again, very, very complex problem, and I'm hoping Congress will get serious about dealing with it. 866-372-7234, the number to call. Let's go to Evelyn in Iowa. Evelyn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
How are you today?
Good. I have a question.
All right.
Does our government withdraw any financial aid from the Human Rights Council now that we've withdrawn from it? Does that mean we can also withdraw our support financially?
Good question, Evelyn. I think what we will see is, you know, of course, the United Nations, I mean, the United States really gives the lion's share of funding for the UN. And so I think that is certainly a part of it. And the president has threatened that more than once to withhold funding. So I think clearly that we're not going to have any money that will be going. I say that. I did not hear exactly what was said, but I would assume, and I'm assuming at this point, that we will make sure our funding does not in any way uphold or support the council. And I think that Frank Gaffney, Evelyn is right. I think this is going to force reform. If not, it will undercut any credibility that the council might have had. But, of course, I'm not sure that they really care about that because the United Nations seems to be hemorrhaging when it comes to credibility. So, Evelyn, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. All right, let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks, Mr. Perkins, for all that you do. That Culture Impact Team is a great idea. My thoughts on the UN is I don't think we should give a penny of taxpayer money to the UN. As far as this immigration, I think this is a major distraction. The Democrats are pushing it front and center as a distraction to take people's eye off how great the economy is doing, how low the unemployment's doing, what a success the summit with North Korea was. Also, the Inspector General's report came out and shows what a witch hunt this has been and how corrupt the top six, I think it was six of the seven top people at the Department of Justice were all in the tank for Hillary. So I think I'm not downplaying the importance of immigration. I think it's important. But I think the conservatives need to also focus on, hey, look how great the economy is doing. Hey, look, if we've got record low unemployment everywhere, we've got success happening in the Korean Peninsula. I think this is more than anything just a distraction. The Democrats are trying to push forward to take everybody's eye off how great things are going. Thanks for what you do. Keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you, Joe. A very valid point, and I'll come back to that. I just verified John Bolton did say last night that with the withdrawal from the UN Human Rights Council, it is going to be accompanied by an end to U.S. funding for both the Council and the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. That according to the National Security Advisor, John Bolton. So that's been verified. My hunch was right. It's interesting. I've read some reporters, Joe, that have brought up the point. Let me see if I've got this at my fingertips. Maybe not. That were asking the question, where was the outrage and the interest 4 years ago when this was such a significant problem with unaccompanied minors? You didn't see this focus. In fact, reporters have been bringing this up, chiding their colleagues about not covering it and now covering it. Look, it's a tragedy, okay? It pulls at everyone's heartstrings and should. I mean, I would be troubled if America was not a nation that was compassionate toward children. Now, all right, that said, doesn't mean we give them a pass, their parents a pass, when they break the law. What we're trying to do, and that's what the Attorney General, when I talked to him yesterday, it's what the President said today, They're not going to do what the Obama administration did and just give them a pass and say, okay, you broke the law. We'll give you a court date and you come back and let them go in the country. Half of them never showed back up for their court dates. They are going to incarcerate them as any lawbreaker. Now, what they're going to try to do is keep the families together if they're in fact families. Okay, that's the compassionate side of this. So, I would not want to be in a country that did not have compassion. And I think that's one of the things that makes us different as Americans, that we are compassionate for people, and we are sympathetic to what is driving many of those that want to come to this country. But I do think there are some that are exploiting this. And that's not just me. That's other that's reporters, and that's others asking that question. You know, you had the IG report, as Joe made a reference to, that talked about at least six high-ranking FBI officials clearly in the tank for Hillary Clinton, vowing to stop Donald Trump. The IG who wrote the report, Inspector General Horowitz, was on Capitol Hill Monday and Tuesday. Now, he got scant coverage, very little coverage. Now, doesn't mean this issue at the border was not important, but I think it was focused on, you know, so some of these other issues would not be. I think Joe has a valid point. I think he has a valid point. All right, let's go to Jordan in Indiana. Jordan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you so much. First-time listener to the program, waiting on the 7 o'clock program. Really enjoying the perspective so far. Just wanted to chime in as far as this immigration issue is concerned. You know, Scripture tells us that there are three groups that the Lord would have us take care of, specifically orphans, widows, and the sojourner. And I think with this particular migrant crisis, we have a responsibility to care for the orphan because we know what it means to be fatherless, to care for the widow as the bride of Christ, and then to care for the sojourner because we are all here and not in our homes. And so I would hope that as, you know, Trump signs this new order to keep families together, that we're mindful of that and mm-hmm. our responsibilities as believers.
Jordan, don't go anywhere because I want to talk with you about this. We only got a few minutes left, but I think you are correct. And let me give you an example of that. I know when a lot of these unaccompanied minors who were being held in facilities and they were looking for sponsors for some, for instance, there was several months back, there were some who came that were pregnant with child and they needed sponsors. And I know a lot of Christian families stepped forward to be sponsors for them. And I believe that's an example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. I think there's a way, you know, I've heard a lot about compassionate justice and about being willing to be strong but also have heart. And I think a balanced approach, I really liked J.D. Greer's response on his blog and on his Facebook, that there is a way that we can be good to our country but also follow Christ and the instruction in Scripture through stepping in and caring for those families. So looking for I think, a balanced approach among believers.
Yeah. You're right. Jordan, sorry we got to cut this conversation short, but we're out of time, and I'm glad you're going to be joining us tonight at 7 p.m. You know, this
Looking
is an interesting
conversation. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling in. I want to talk more about this because Jordan brings up a really good point. How do we respond to this as Christians individually, personally? And I think there's ways to do that. But at the same time, as a nation, we have to have the rule of law. And there is this call to care for the sojourner, give them justice, but there's also an obligation for them to obey the law, the same law that you and I obey, that's talked about in Scripture. Anyway, I'm going to spend some time talking about that because Jordan brings up a really good point. Folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you'll join us again tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for this special webcast on how to launch a culture impact team in your church. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.